Good morning and welcome to Brass Tacks Sunday, as usual, brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated. I'm your host, Corey Lane, and we go down to the usual quarter after one this afternoon. I am joined by my standing and outstanding producer, Mr. Dennis DJ Johnson. He'll be taking care of all things technical and also my producer for today. Now, what are we talking about today? Today, we're looking at road safety in Barbados. Now, when this topic was first floated with me, I'm saying road safety, you know, we talk a lot about COVID. I was glad to get away from COVID, but I said road safety. And I want to start by giving us some context. I started to discuss this topic recently in one of our chats. And I myself was even surprised at how much so many people have to say on road safety. Two of the persons in the chat actually were almost struck on a crossing Friday when I started to discuss this topic. So a lot of you out there, you have your concerns about how the road users of Barbados are using the roads and how safe it is. And I am glad for this opportunity to welcome you in to the Brass Tacks Sunday panel discussion on road safety in Barbados. Get close to the telephone line. The number is 434-1790. And of course, you can try to send through your WhatsApps to 266-4862. That's 266-IVOB to ensure that you can get in on this topic this morning. Now, joining me to discuss this, we have Mr. Junior Jordan and Mr. Mark Carbane on the line with us already. And we're going to be joined by Mr. Leon Blaze shortly. With no further ado, I want to start with Mr. Junior Jordan. I want him to introduce himself to you, tell us a bit about his connection to this topic, road safety in Barbados. Good morning and welcome, Junior.
Good morning to you, Corey. Good morning to you, producer Dennis, and tomorrow and soon to be coming in, Leon Blades. Now, I have been doing training in this country from 1978. I'm a certified, trained and certified by the Canada Safety Council. And I've done a lot of training up and down the islands in Barbados. And my passion really for road safety goes back to when I was at school, sitting down in the front of the buses in the Ivory and watching Mr. Graves and others drive and being curious as to how they control the vehicle, the buses, the way they did. Let's fast forward now to 2021. Road safety is a topic that every single road user in this country should be aware of. And I'm gonna use a little bit of a color. I'm gonna talk color this morning, not black and white. I'm gonna talk red, orange, and green. Red, orange, and green. Now, why am I saying that? This morning, I took the opportunity to go for a walk on the beach, on a southern beach. Guess what? There were red flags up on the beach and fluttering. And I stopped and read the sign which says no swimming. Would you believe, Corey and listeners, that there were people inside the water swimming and surfing? Mm-hmm. And I'm using that as a segue in terms of road safety. Specific colors, green, orange, and red, mean certain things in this country. But alas, there are a number of people who seem ignorant or deliberately ignore the warning signs, as I like to call them. So that's a nutshell. So my training goes back more than 40 years, mm-hmm. and it's actually as a driving instructor myself and all instructors, our main aim is to inculcate good training values from early with the view to a student passing the test the very first time. Mm-hmm. That's it in a nutshell for now.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Junior Jordan. Well known my to pleasure. Us on all things road safety. And of course, we have Mr. Mark Carbane. Come in, welcome, take off your shoes, and let me talk road safety and what is your involvement in this topic.
I am not taking off my shoes because I fully intend to stand up for the whole duration of this conversation. So I got some comfortable shoes on and I'm ready. Good morning to you, Corey. Good morning, Dennis, King of the Ballheads, and to all of the other listeners across the world who are joining us today on this really important topic. My interest, well, look, I'm a Barbadian. First and foremost, I was born and raised in Barbados, lived there for the first 28 years of my life before moving to the United Kingdom, where I pursued my studies and where I now work as the Key Route Network Manager for Transport for West Midlands. And sounds like a fancy title, but all it really is stress from one day to the next, looking after 605 kilometers of roads in the middle of England. And it does have under my remit is road safety. It's a really important area for me as a practitioner, and it is particularly personal to me because, you know, those people who know me from living in Barbados will tell you that I lost my sister, my brother on roads in Barbados, and that has been, you know, a traumatic experience, and it has been the focus for me and why I have continued really to work in this area and try my utmost to see change. Looking through the lens of the United Kingdom is always very interesting because, you know, we are one of the leaders in the world when it comes to road safety, but I am always also looking to see what happens on roads in Barbados. I keep quite a comprehensive database of road traffic collisions in Barbados just because of my interests. And it's important for me to do that. And I'm always, you know, ready and willing to lend my experience or my voice, as I am doing today, to conversations around transportation, highways, and traffic. I can talk all day about it. So just saying.
Yeah, we can be talking all day about it. Before we come back to this side of the pond here in Barbados, I want you to give our listeners an understanding of what your day-to-day tasks are like. What are some of the things you do within your role?
Lord have mercy. So, okay, look, my job is really interesting in that I'm one of the few people in the country who gets to work across the three thematic areas. And when I say the three thematic areas, you either work in transport, you work in highways, or you work in traffic if you're working here in the United Kingdom. Okay, so you might be a transport planner looking at all of the various developments that will come forward over the next 10, 15 years, looking at all of the big strategic things that will happen, and you're preparing the network and trying to see, okay, how do we need to accommodate those? How do we need to manage demand? Or you might be a highways professional. You're concerned with the surface, you're concerned with assets, you're concerned with how the road surface is deteriorating, how we're going to manage winter. Or you're concerned with traffic, road safety mostly, or the things that are running on the surface. For me, I get to work across all three, and that's a very fortunate position, but that's just because my experience has led me up this path. And what does my day-to-day look like? So I start every day, particularly COVID has been interesting, because I've been working from home for a year now, and it's really interesting how that has affected us who work in traffic and highways, because we seem to be working harder even though there's less traffic. So on a good day, I start with the team. We look at what's coming ahead. We do a lot of horizon scanning, looking ahead. What's coming? What do we know? What's planned over the next couple of weeks and months in regards to roadworks? Roadworks is a massive, massive issue for us. This is a very old country. We have a lot of old infrastructure, and we have to constantly keep renewing it, repairing it, or there are emergencies to deal with. So we look at what's coming. Then there's always, particularly in my case, trying to make sure that I work very, very closely with partners. So I work with Highways England, who is our strategic road network operator who passes through on my region. So I have to work very closely with them, know what's going on. What are they planning to do? How are we going to interact? Are we going to conflict with any closures that they have planned? If they have planned closures, am I going to be taking thousands of traffic coming through our area that we need to know about? So we're horizon scanning. We're looking at that. And then there's always the activities of, so what do we need to look at for the future? So, you know, on any given day, yes, I might be looking at what's happening next week or the week after, but there's always the what's coming. What do we need to plan for? What do we need to be preparing for? You know, as an example, I got my approval last Thursday, which was quite timely, for our latest action plan for road safety, funny enough, which is for the next 3 years. So that's not just about tomorrow or next week. That's okay. We've got 31 commitments here that we are all saying we're going to deliver as multi-agencies together to reduce our casualties. We are aiming for 40% over the next 10 years. So what are we going to do? So there are some days where you have to, you know, take a moment to get things approved, look at what's coming further down the line and not just what is happening today or tomorrow. So it's a very, very mixed bag and a lot of partnership working, you know, and on top of that, I chair the National Traffic Managers Forum, which is, you know, a really important entity for us here in the United Kingdom, where every three 3 months, I get to sit down with traffic managers from across England's regions, one from Scotland, one from Wales, one from Northern Ireland. And we talk about the things that are affecting traffic. It is very therapeutic for us most of the time. We just sit and have a conversation about the things that are really, really challenging and the big stuff. So, you know, I do my day-to-day job, looking at what's going on roads, planning for the future, but then also going up a level around what's going on around this nation in terms of Brexit. How is COVID affecting us? How do we need to respond in terms of traffic? Where are the good practice things that might be happening down in the Southwest that we need to know up in the Northeast? Where are the things that are happening in London that might be relevant in the Midlands? So it's a mixed picture.
Whoa. Listen, let me come back to this side of the pond with Junior Jordan. Junior Jordan, where is our transport plan? Do we have our traffic management forum? Are you on in that forum here in Barbados? Talk to me. We coming back to Barbados now. Talk to me.
No, for a lot of years, I used to be on some committees, but at the present moment, no. I do private training and tuition. What I want to say strongly, very strongly, is this. If you want to have a good driver at the end, you must start properly at the beginning. Right. What I want to say is this. In this country, in order for anybody to teach anybody to drive on a class vehicle, the only requirement right now is that you must have held a license for 3 years. In other words, Corey or Dennis, if you're driving for 3 years and you had a car in the back, you can just go and start teaching people to drive without any training. I am saying now that it is time in 2021 that every single person who is about to teach anybody to drive be trained. As a matter of fact, some people have been in the business a long time, and you may consider using the grandfather clause to allow some of them maybe 15 or 20 years. But I want to say this. Mark spoke about England, and England, Canada, and the States, they are very, very disciplined when it comes to training. The ADIs in England approve driving instructors. They do training in four parts: a theory, a practical, and then an instructional one and instructional two. What does that entail? Where the instructor is teaching a class, a novice class, and it's assessed by assessors, and then an advanced class, coming to the point of being called an ADI. And I'm saying that we have, as a proposal, the laws in Barbados need to change to encompass that every single person who goes in to teach anybody to drive be certified. That's the one thing. And then refresher training has to happen. So I'm saying that when I was a board member of the Transport Authority, there are a number of things in the states that were done then. But that's another part of the training. But right now, there are a number of people who drive, who it appears deliberately circumvent the rules and regulations of this country, i.e. the red light. I've seen several times, and a lot of people have seen, where a light changes to red, and sometimes two, three, or four people go through that red light. That is fraught with danger and difficulties for the others coming on the other side. But I think what we need to have is a swifter moving of the judicial system in terms of penalties. If you break the law, we want the law to be swift to deal with you, with due process, of course, i.e. suspensions or revocation. But what needs to happen is that people must be held fully accountable and responsible for their actions, especially when those actions infringe. I'll tell you what, I went to Yields, Wales years ago. And in Wales, they have people in certain parts of Europe who sit as traffic commissioners. I attended one of those hearings, started at 9 o'clock and finished in the evening about 4. Listen to this carefully. Here was a PSV operator who had 130 buses, nearly as much as the transport board. Guess what? One of the reasons this guy or this operator was brought against the commissioner for running some of his buses 60 seconds late on a route. You heard that? 60 seconds. Yeah. A minute. And then other things to do with drinking and driving and money. The bottom line is that trial, that hearing took one day with a break for lunch. And at the end of the day, I remember distinctly like yesterday, the commissioner said, forthwith, you cannot move 30 buses from the depot tomorrow morning. Which means that if in the Barbadian context, we need to be tough in terms of bringing this thing back to heel. So if that was 30 buses he had chartered out, to make 30 cents of money, he would have been losing 30 cents of money immediately. We need, of course, I'm saying with due process, but we need to toughen up what we're doing here in order to bring back this whole thing with road safety from going over the precipice. It can be done.
When I first started driving, I remember red light meant to stop.
No, absolutely.
A red light is a suggestion. You know, maybe you should stop. That's what it seems like to me. Now, you talk about penalties and hitting them where it hurts the most in the
absolutely.
In terms of a solution. Mark, do you agree, and how do you all approach it?
This is an interesting topic because only last week I was talking about this to somebody. And it relates purely to how we deal with speed management. You're talking about red light running there, which is a scourge of everybody who works in traffic because it's so dangerous, you know. And people chance it all over the world. I see it here in the UK all the time as well. You know, if people think they can get away with it where they're at a junction where there's no red light running camera, they'll go for it. It happens. It's just a behavioral problem that we see manifest itself a lot on the road network. But I was talking to somebody about this recently because I was saying a lot of times what happens with speed management and enforcement, you're waiting for a violation to happen in order to address the issue, okay? And by address the issue, I mean you're waiting for somebody to break the law, to pay a fine, and that fine is then used to be able to push back into addressing measures in road safety. And the comment that I was making to someone here recently was there is a certain perverse nature about that to me, that you're trying to keep roads safe, but you have to wait for somebody to break the law, to pay a fine, to then use that money to make roads safe. That doesn't work. And that, I mean, and I'll be honest, that kind of underpins a lot of what we do in the United Kingdom. And we are now challenging ourselves, particularly here in the West Midlands where I work, that we're going to have to come at this differently. Post-pandemic, we need a different strategy. But Junior is right. There is a real issue around behavior on roads in Barbados. And, you know, we're talking here in a Bajan context, so it's probably fine to say that. But behavior is the biggest challenge that we have as practitioners working across traffic. And why I say that, look, if you look at the period between 2000 and 2010, we made loads of gains in the United Kingdom with reducing road casualties down by 40%. Loads of gains. But if you look at 2010 to 2020, we've faltered, we've stalled. We've seen our numbers starting to tick back up now. We are around 1,700 deaths a year in the UK. And that is really a cause for a lot of concern for most of us who work in this sector. Why? Because we're not seeing the level of investment that is necessary to help drive down. But investment is one thing. During that 2000 to 2010 period, we engineered out a lot of the issues that were causing us problems. So we're into the hard stuff now. And the hard stuff is getting people to change their behaviors. That is where we are firmly in the UK. And that's where Barbados is as well. So there is a parallel.
I want to ask you a direct question. Now, Junior did mention something proactive as in addition to the reactive. The proactive is in training. Let me start with training. The reactive is in the fines and penalties. In terms of additional proactive measures, do you have any suggestions beyond training? What can we do before people make the road unsafe that we try to make it safe?
You have to recognize that when you are dealing with behavior change, you can't just deal with somebody who's turning up at NTW for a license. Okay, you're too late. All right, you're too late. What's the point of coming talking to me about behavior change when I you know,
too late.
Exactly. So, but what you have to appreciate is when you're dealing with traffic and highways, this is a generational game that you have to get yourself into, okay? So, Corey, whilst you might ask that question about what can I say or what suggestions do I have? I always have suggestions for Barbados. I got my six-point plan here written down because I was like, what am I going to say today? I always have a plan, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. You have to be really, really careful and recognize the plan might not come to fruition during my tenure, okay? That is the nature of traffic. You might not see the gains just because you initiate the plan, but that doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. All right? It doesn't matter.
It's a long game.
It is. I tell you, you have to play the long game with traffic. Mm-hmm. And when you get into this space of behavior change, it is a long game. So where would I go? I'm starting in the primary schools in Barbados, and I'm looking at our curriculum reform. Okay? And I'm saying to the Ministry of Education, when I look over the last decade and I see how many people are being killed on roads in Barbados, we have a problem with trauma in our communities being caused by road deaths. So therefore, we have to look at how young people, you know, in Barbados, they still have a real beautiful thing in that a lot of young people still walk to school. They still take the bus to school. And it's great, you know. We spend so much time here in the United Kingdom trying to get those things happening because kids can live not too far from school, but they might get dropped there. And it's creating all sorts of problems at 8:50 in the morning, our busiest time on the road and at work, right? But if you're going to try and inculcate a new culture, you have to start in schools and start with looking at how do we introduce the built environment. I'm not just talking about road safety now, because road safety is just one component of traffic and highways. How do we introduce the built environment to young people in primary schools, in secondary schools, in the polytechnic, in community college, in the university, and carry it all the way through? But when you're starting early with schools, you have to start by helping them to understand what their behaviors in the road environment mean and what it could ultimately lead to. Start there. Get it in.
Junior.
Yes, I want to add on to what Mark has said and to suggest this. This is a proposal I've made before. In Edmonton, certain parts of in Canada, they have something called a mobile safety city. So I'm even going to step further back than Mark to go to say that we can, in terms of setting up a training area for people even younger than primary school. We have a botanical gardens, I'm told, that have a lot of space. And perhaps, just perhaps, this may be a cue for the government to use some part of that botanical gardens as a training area. I visited the Edmonton Mobile Safety City in Canada years ago. Listen to me. They have every single facet of road safety information in that area that a child is going to be using when he goes on the street. So little children I saw being trained from as early as 3, 4, and 5, and how to ride a little bicycle, how to put out the hand, how to push the button, how to look left in the Canadian context, when in Barbados we look right first, and simple procedures like that. But the parents have also got a role to play by their examples that they set for the little people when they cross the streets, when they drive, how they drive, and the examples that they set. You cannot have a situation in this country, or indeed any country, where an adult who has little children around them are saying, well, I'm late for work, so I'm driving at 80 kilometers in a 60 kilometer zone. The child may not say anything to you then, but it goes into the archives. And when that child gets the license and you tell them, listen, remember, you have to stick under the speed limit, the child can go in the archives and say, but I remember some time ago, you were driving at 80 kilometers in a 60 kilometer zone. Therefore, parents have got an awesome task in providing the examples for the younger people, but it has to start early. And I'm agreeing with you, Mark. The primary schools, I have information for training in primary schools, secondary schools, and even the vintage drivers and our road users. So training is at all levels, but it must start in the beginning. In other words, bend the tree when it is young.
Yeah. Let me come back there, Corey, because, and I'll give you an interesting example to follow up on that point, Junior. Sure. Our first son was born in London, right? And just after he was born, I got a job at Oxford about 2004, I think it was. And we moved there. And Oxford is one of the places in England where if you want to see how to deliver transport well, that is your city, right? The older cities, Oxford, York, Cambridge, excellent. So I worked there for a year, and it has really left a very long-lasting impression on me, because everywhere that I've gone in my job elsewhere, and there's a common joke here, everywhere I go, people always say he's had too many jobs, right? but we tend to laugh about it, but I don't mind, because when they then start to hit problems and looking for experience, they suddenly find me, because it doesn't matter. But the point I'm making is this. When I moved to Oxford, our youngest son was about 2 years old or something. And the county council sent home a package to us one day. And I opened up this thing to see what it contained. And it was a whole set of information about roads and traffic and things that you need to be concerned. He was only about two.
Okay.
Exactly. So the point that you're making is well made, in that, yes, education has to be the underpinning of what we are trying to do to change behaviors. And that can start from nursery. It can start in primary. Doesn't matter. The key point is you have to have a plan to be able to say, this is how we are going to go about this.
Yes, systematically.
Absolutely.
I want to admit a lot of my road safety knowledge did come from primary school, but it wasn't from a wide ranging group. It was from true Cub Scouts and the road safety badge. You know, you learn all these different things. You know, your mother, your father, they teach you these things. You know, look left, look right, look left again. Some used to tell you to look up and down. You would look up in the sky.
Corey, it's not looking left anymore. It's looking right. And people for drive that drive on the left, because there's a reason for it. Mm-hmm. The North Americans look to the left first because that's the danger side to them. In any country, including Barbados, you must look to the right first, then left, then back to the right, simply because the person to your right is closer and can get into collision with you easier.
Correct. So it's there right, left, go. Right. But then we were also taught about who should walk on the inside, the type of clothes that you wear, all these. But for me, all of these things are not things that I hear and know coming up. So this is really concern, like, in terms of who are really teaching the next generation to ensure. Because as Mark rightly said, by the time you show up at MTW to take that regulation test, you know what I mean? The shit done sale is already in China, and we got serious problems. Anyhow, we are joined by Mr. Leon Blades. I'm going to get an opening comment to him before we open up the program fully. A number of questions have come in through our chat and through our WhatsApp. And of course, the callers are lined up. So I am going to say a good morning and welcome to Mr. Blades.